Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and one of the brightest men I know. Tim, thank you for coming on, and let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all, your expectations for the first presidential debate. Who has to do what?
All right. This is a critical event for both candidates, but for very, very different reasons. For Donald Trump, he has to simply appear presidential. He's got to keep his emotions in check. He's got to appear as if he's got a basic grasp of the issues, even if he can't go into granular detail. But that's an area where he has not proved himself in a demonstrable way so far in the campaign. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, has to do almost the opposite. She has to step away from the details that she has immersed herself in and provide a broad argument, and as much an emotional as an intellectual argument for why she should be president. So they each have to connect with voters in pretty different ways here.
Well, let me disagree with you for a moment, or at least question you on the first assumption about what Trump has to do. He did extraordinarily well, not controlling himself, in the primary debates. Why do you think he has to do that now?
I think it's a different audience. In the primary debates, he was appealing to a base of voters for whom policies and details really aren't that important, and it was to get the nomination. Here the objective is to win the presidency, and people need to see him. Campaigns are acts of visualization. People need to see him as presidential if he's going to close the deal. So what worked, what excited his base in the primary season, will not work as effectively in the fall debates.
Well, now let me take that just a bit further, because I mean, I'm not convinced of that. We see the polls, and the polls are showing, you know, 50-50 split, basically. Some people say she's ahead 1%. Some people say he's ahead 1%. But, you know, it doesn't seem like his lying or not telling the truth or changing his mind has really affected the way that this race is progressing.
Yeah, but if you look at his matchup numbers over time, while he has closed the gap for sure, he's still mired in the upper 30s, low 40s. And if he's going to close the deal with American voters, I think he has to do more than he has so far. Now, he says, hey, I did. Just me being me worked really well in the primary debates. Don't expect anything different in the fall. And he can't do a complete 180 because that raises questions of authenticity. But I think for that undecided voter, there's 7 or 8% out there who are going to need something more than they've gotten so far to move into the Trump camp. I think he's got to do something different than he did in the spring.
Now, Tim Versalotti of the excellent Western New England University poll, that is really, you know, fascinating. But the New York Times recently did something that I'm sure caught your attention. They gave out the same polling data to four different polling places, major institutions, no frauds, no phonies, and they came up with, you know, pretty different analysis of who was going to win. How come?
Yeah, I thought that was a great demonstration of what goes into polling, and I agree the polling organizations that they drew from were top-notch places. And what it illustrates is that polling is as much an art as it is a science. You get your data out of the field, you take a look and ask yourself, how closely does this represent the population that I'm trying to model? You're going to have to mathematically weight up groups that don't respond in very large numbers, young people, less educated people. And then in doing so, you're injecting some error, and that's going to affect your margin of error. And so your final numbers, which take into account the margin of error, are going to be variable. So when they did that, when the time did that, and they got these estimates that varied not by a huge amount, anywhere from 1 to 4 percentage points, but anyone who works in polling would look at that and say, sure, yeah, that makes total sense. And I'm all for readers getting a look at that too, because maybe then they will place fewer demands on polling data. We want pulling data to predict the future as an electorate, and that's not what it's designed to do. And the New York Times exercise illustrated that very nicely.
And what is it designed to do again, one more time?
What it's designed to do is take a snapshot of a moving target with the understanding that there's going to be error, there's some variance, it's not a perfect enterprise. And so when we look at numbers, we need to keep that in mind. The press in particular wants absolutes. They want to be able to say, this is the state of the race. They don't like fuzziness. They don't like margins. But in polling, that's what you have. And the more people understand that, I think the better the context will be when polls come out.
Okay, Mr. Political Scientist, Mr. Pollster, excellent pollster, I want to ask you a question. Recently, Robert Kennedy's daughter, Carrie, came out and announced that she had met with G.W. Bush and he was going to vote for Hillary Clinton. There's something called the bandwagon effect, which is people want to know what other people are going to do. They want to know if they're going to be on the winning side, but also they want to know what some of their leaders will do. This, the fact that Papa Bush is going to vote for Hillary, will that sway people?
It may sway a few. I'm not sure it'll sway very many, but if there were some on the fence, particularly Republicans who are struggling with the prospect of voting for Donald Trump, can't bring themselves to vote for Gary Johnson on the Libertarian ticket, this may be the impetus to push them in the direction of Hillary Clinton. I don't think that's a large number of votes, but in a tight race like this, who knows? It could be influential.
And how important is it to know that you're on the winning side, this so-called bandwagon effect, that Americans don't want to be with the loser? They want to be with the winner.
I think that comes into play more often retrospectively. When we do polling, we know that asking people whether they voted in a recent election, some people will say they did when they didn't because they want to look like good citizens. But more to the point, if you ask people who say they have voted for whom they voted, you'll get a disproportionate number saying they voted for the winner. People don't like to say they voted for the loser. So I'm not sure it works in a tight election like this where people size up the polls and say, well, I'm going with candidate X or Y because he or she is ahead. But I think retrospectively, when we ask and try to explain what happened in an election, that's where that bandwagon kicks in.
Very quickly, we only have a minute and a half, but very quickly, my bet is that if you ask the head of the major polls in the United States and gave them truth serum, who they're going to vote for, they would all tell you they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. How does that affect the way things work?
Well, in theory, it should not affect anything at all, because although people who work in polling, especially political polling, and by this I mean nonpartisan, more academic-based research or media-based as opposed to the folks working for the campaigns, everyone has views, everyone has someone they're rooting for. But in the polling industry, we want to get it right more than anything. We don't want to put our thumb on the scale in favor of one candidate or another, because this is our day of reckoning. This is where our methods get put to the test. And so you want to come as close as possible to what you think is going to happen, as opposed to giving the edge to the candidate you might privately support.
Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, a great friend to this radio station. You've always been there for us, Tim, and we very much appreciate it. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about some of those ballot questions in Massachusetts.
I look forward to it.